I know that alcohol has no place in my life, but I'm not running from it.
Welcome to the Recover Yourself podcast, where we add the conversation of recovering to the conversation of recovering from. I'm your host, Martin John, and today we're talking with the person behind the Recovery Happy Hour podcast, Trisha Lewis. Trisha has 2.5 years, and although that's still early sobriety, she's got ideas about making your program yours that I think is very important to hear. The whole idea of recovering yourself is that your recovery program is yours. You're not borrowing it from other people, but you're doing it because you need to do what you need to do to get to where you need to go. And these are important things to understand when you're facing your own addictions and your own checking out. It's super important to understand that your recovery is not only recovering from some singular thing, but that recovery is a long-term thing that you're doing for yourself. And it's wonderful to be able to bring in Trisha, who has thought about and worked with recovery on such an intense basis because of her podcast, because of the work that she does within the community. I love your shoe collection, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a fan of shoes, so...
Yeah, me too. Divorce will make you do strange things. I decided to start a designer shoe collection, and that was when I was basically drinking and shopping my feelings. I can't say that those were all good decisions, but they felt right at the time, and they're shoes I'll never give away, so...
Yes. So how much time do you have?
2.5 years.
2.5 years. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Like, that's a, like, you are in new territory, right?
Yeah, like, it's like 5% makes it past a year, and then like 5% of that makes it to 2 years or something wild.
Right. What are some of the things that, like, that this 2.5 years have spelled out for you for, I don't know, how much like relapsing did you do before you kind of like decided?
Well, I always knew I was going to have to quit someday. That's just always been part of the plan. Addiction runs in my family, and I knew pretty early on, probably by the time I was 22, 23, that I was not a normal drinker, that I did not have the ability to stop when I wanted to, like other people did. And so I always knew that it was just going to have to happen someday. And I also knew that whenever I got to it, I was only going to do it one time. That's it. So I was going to do it right. So I really waited until I was ready, because I knew that I wasn't going to start and stop and start and stop, because I'm way too extreme of a person. I'm way too, like, you know, overachiever, task oriented. And so, like, if I set my mind to something, I do it. And that's how I treated recovery in the exact same way.
Yeah.
To answer the other part of your question, what is it uncovered is the fact that, like, my desire and need and anxiety over having control is futile.
Oh, yeah.
That's really, like, the biggest lesson. It's just like, man, let go, Trisha. Yeah, control is an illusion. It really is. And I read it in Melanie Beattie's book, you know, The Language of Letting Go, which I post from that book on Instagram pretty frequently. And I get the most interaction from people about that book because it speaks to so many people. And yeah, I'm just such a type A anxiety ridden control freak that it's a lot to wrap your head around, to realize that that's not real. That desire for control is this thing that you think you want, but it doesn't really exist.
Right. And in my workshops, in the workshops that I do, I talk about, like, these are all feelings. You feel like you're in control. You feel angry. You feel anxious. They don't exist.
And all of us really just want, like, we really just want things to be permanent, and control is the same. It's a very temporary, fleeting feeling that goes away. And, you know, we all just desire that thing that we can have forever, and add control to the list, you know?
Oh, yeah. So it's interesting that you talk about, like, you always knew it was something that you would have to stop. Like, that's so intriguing to me. And it's bringing up so many thoughts, because I was like, I didn't know that would, like that never crossed my mind. Right? Like,
well, I mean, I can explain that a little bit.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been around addiction since I was probably 12. My older brother was, you know, I was a very quiet alcoholic. He was a very loud one. You know, it was just like his problems were the stigma, the, you know, stereotype, low bottom, you know, low functioning, you know, jail, homeless, drug dealing, prison, all of it. So I grew up around that and learned a lot about addiction and learned a lot about my family history. And I don't know, it's like, there's part of me that legitimately thought that having that kind of knowledge about addiction and being around it, that somehow maybe I could outsmart it, that somehow knowing enough about it would make me immune from it.
Oh, control.
Yes. And you know, of course that's not the case. It's very humbling when you find out, oops, I'm an alcoholic too. So yeah, I don't know. I guess just knowing about it is, I just had a really brutal sense of the reality of it this whole time. So it was almost like even during those times when I was drinking and having fun with it, that feeling of fun disappeared very, very quickly because I also knew what the other side of it was like. So I almost didn't get to enjoy it 100% while I was drinking, you know, because I always knew that like, oh, but it can also turn into this really ugly thing too.
Right. Mad. That's yeah. That's some insight for, you know, like not only like for a young person moving into adulthood or teen years and stuff like that. Like that's a lot of insight. And then to approach it in this way where it's like, I am this kind of person. I am going to, you know, full measure. I'm going to do it completely. And to move into your, and then to be doing all the work that you're doing within the community now, right?
Overachiever.
Well, right. Like you're just kind of like, I'm going to plant my flag in this thing. 2.5 years isn't long term. For me, it's
still in early sobriety.
Right. And, but it was our conversation that made me want to talk with you. Because our conversation was like, well, there is no one answer, right? There is like being in the rooms is a way to get sober, but you have to make your own way, yeah, you know? Yeah. And you have
to give yourself the permission to do that and the permission to know that that's okay, because then you can really dig into it. If you're constantly worried about, am I doing this right? Then that's what you need to work on.
Right. You need to work on like that self-trust that you know the path forward.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, it was scary in that in going against the group, in going against this idea of like, oh, well, you have to, you know, like even when it came to my mentors and my sponsors and stuff, it was like, well, you have to keep going to meetings. And I'm like, well, that's not going to be what I'm going to do. Right. And I don't know what your program is today.
Yeah.
But it's yours.
I'm happy to talk about that. So yeah. I would consider my recovery program a very diversified portfolio. I wanted to try everything and mm-hmm. Because there's so many different ways to get sober. And why limit yourself to just one or two? Like, America is all about options, right? Like you can, you know, buy 70 different types of cereal at the store, you know, so why can't recovery be any different? So I started with a podcast. Listening to a podcast convinced me to try a meeting and a 12-step meeting. Then I decided to join a Facebook accountability group. Then I went back to my therapist, who I had previously dumped because she told me I might have a drinking problem.
Which you were full aware of. You just didn't want to.
That's its own story. And, you know, and so like this whole time I was trying all these different things, but I continued to try all of them. I wasn't like, okay, this isn't going to work, so I'm going to try this one thing and hop over here full time. I was kind of like part time doing a whole bunch of things and just taking little bits here and there and using what worked for me. And I, don't get me wrong, I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the people that ruin it, but the program in itself the program in itself is part of my recovery and having a sponsor.
Yeah, I just figured why, you know, because there are some people like in 12 step that will tell you, just like you said, you have to go to meetings. You have to go to meetings. Mm-hmm. And people are wrong all the time. You know, I learned, I mean, and I understand that what this is going to make me sound like, but I looked at a lot of these people in these meetings and I was like, okay, a lot of you have lived in the same town your entire life. A lot of you have had the same job your entire life. Why would I take advice from you? You know, like I want to hear everything you tell me about like how to not pick up a drink, but as far as how to live a life of recovery, I get to pick and choose who I take direction from, because at the end of the day, I choose how to live my life. And if I'm choosing to live it because of the way somebody else tells me, then that's not living my life. That's living somebody else's life.
Absolutely.
So I was just unabashedly okay with trying whatever I want and whatever worked. And here I am 2.5 years later. So far it's working, you know, but I also know that sometimes things don't work. So you got to shake things up. And you got to try something new, or you try a different therapist, or you try a different group, or you, you know, learn a, you know, meditation, whatever. I do believe that changing it up is so key, because it keeps you excited about what you're doing. And it really gives you the opportunity to continue to advance, to continue to grow and learn more. And I don't know, like anytime I get too caught up in the surface level of like what I'm doing that is quote unquote right or wrong in, you know, sobriety or recovery, I'm missing the point.
Absolutely. You know?
So that's kind of, I'm always just trying to make sure I'm staying like under the surface and working on the real stuff, not on the things that just don't matter. You know, like it doesn't matter that I haven't been to a meeting in 6 months. It's been 6 months.
Yeah.
And I don't feel bad about that because I'm still getting accountability with other alcoholics every day. And that's what it's about. You know, it's about connecting with people and not isolating yourself. Where I meet those people, whether it's online or it's in person, in my opinion, doesn't matter. Because again, it's working for me. So that's what
right.
I focus on. What is keeping me sober today?
Yeah, for you, it doesn't matter. And there are going to be people who it does, right? Like... Mm-hmm. Like, and that's fine. And there's nothing like
mad respect for that. Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. If going to AA meetings is what is fueling your fire, do it. Oh my God. Yes. Keep doing it. If going to therapy every day is doing it for you, fantastic. If you need to go to Costa Rica and do a 4-day ayahuasca ceremony, whatever, I don't care. If it makes you not want to drink, badass, go for it. Who am I to say what's right or wrong? I only live in my brain, you know?
Right, right. And something you mentioned like really kind of rings really loud for me, and that's like people pleaser, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all kind of carry some people pleasing qualities, and so much of like the whole idea of recover yourself is to recover yourself, right? You. And not that you that wants to please somebody else, because that's not you.
Right. Yeah, not the surface you. The real you, like
yeah.
What's under the surface. I keep going back to that. Like what's under the surface? Like that's the real shit.
Right. Where are some things that you've noticed that like, here's an action that is actually taking me away or adding to my anxiety?
It's work. I'm a workaholic. Absolutely. Work is my pacifier. If I'm feeling shaky and unstable, I know that I have control with work. So I want to go right to work. And I want to produce and be productive and achieve. That is absolutely still my pacifier. If achieving is my what makes me feel worthy and valid, then I want to do things that make me feel valid. And if that's working and accomplishing, that's what it is. I see exactly where that, why I'm doing it. Like I'm 100% aware of what's happening. It just so happens that like, that pacifier isn't necessarily an unhealthy one, but it still kind of distracts me from the root issue. You know, it can be good or bad depending on how you look at it, but it's just a constant work in progress for me. Like I do know that, you know, I am an empathetic, person who likes to relate to other people and communicate and share experiences and struggles and feelings and help other people. And that's where you get like true self-worth. You know, but being productive is also a way that it's like a cheap way for me to feel that too, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It's it's like fast food versus like an organic, you know, like locally sourced meal. You know, it's like it gets the job done, but it's not the best way to do it.
Well, yeah, and again, it's not about it. Like sometimes it is the best way to do it.
Yeah, and also, yeah, it's like you can't be like an enlightened Buddha 100% of the day. Like you just do the best you can, and you also can't recover everything. You can't have recovery brain about everything. And you know, that's a really that's a good way to make shitty decisions sometimes if you try to like overthink and recover everything. Because sometimes you just gotta, you know, go to work and get your stuff done.
and that's exactly like again, that is you, right? That is you living you and being present with that. It seems like you had like you have the same idea of yourself today as you always did, or has that shifted at all, like throughout your recovery?
You know, I feel like I've always been non-traditional. And everything I've ever done, it's funny, it's laughable sometimes. But I think that getting sober gave me the ability to stop apologizing for it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, again, going back to people pleasing, it's just like, I am who I am. I do the best I can every day. And I can't apologize for that ever, because I'm not going to make everybody happy. And that's okay. You know, I can do good things and be the best I know how to be, and that's okay. And I sort of like, now as I go through my life, I can always add that, and that's okay, at the end of every sentence. Whereas before, I feel like anytime I did something, I was always trying to sell it. I was always trying to get everyone's permission, you know, get everyone's approval, that whole, that people pleasing trap. And I trust myself, and I think I have the confidence to not, to just be okay with however I am and not judge myself all the time. A lot of the thoughts that went through my head used to be just so judgmental, good or bad, you know, everything was good or bad. I should or I shouldn't. And once you get rid of that part and just be you, and again, and just don't judge yourself all the time for just being how you are, there's a lot of freedom in that. There really is. So, yeah, I think I just kind of lightened up on myself. I mean, stop taking everything so goddamn seriously.
Well, right. You know, what you say is at the core of what we're talking about, like the recovery, right? Is because you need to be okay with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always go back to like, we're all going to die anyways, right? Like we're all going to end up dead. Like, what am I really going to be worried about on my deathbed? Like, is it going to be that like, I didn't say you're welcome when somebody said thank you, and like somebody might've, you know, thought I was a real bitch that day. Like, I mean, like those detailed, obsessive, people-pleasing things, like, just, you gotta let it go. Like, none of that matters. At the end of the day, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
And I stopped worrying about all those little things and worrying, and just, I just don't worry as much because it doesn't matter.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. What did you do to, one, become aware of that? And then what did you do to try and combat it, if that's the good word for it?
You know, some of this is absolutely a result of doing the 12 steps. You know, getting to take the time to really dig in and figure out what your bad habits are and working on making them better is huge. I mean, I like the 12 steps because it's basically a checklist for me. And anytime I can go into something and go, okay, what part of this is me? What part of this is what I'm doing? And spoiler alert, like that usually solves it. It's like, oh, wait, it's not about what that person did to me. This is totally about my response to it. Knowing, having that skill set now to kind of go down that checklist is really helpful for me personally. And also some of this isn't even recovery. Some of this is just like making it through adversity. You know, getting sober for me came after I got a divorce. You know, I was married for 5 years and found out that my ex-husband had two girlfriends on the side. Two, not one, two. And my life changed in a day. All of a sudden, everything that I had that I knew that was stable was completely gone. And getting to walk through that and come out on the other side and know that I am strong and I'm a lot more capable than I ever thought, getting to power through that and make it really gives you the opportunity to take a good hard look at yourself and realize what you can do and what you can't. You know, at the end of the day, we're all just responsible for ourselves and our response to things. And that's the only thing I can ever really work on is just, you know, so it's like it kind of forces you to just work on you. And that's it. And again, stop worrying about other people because you can't control that. You cannot control that. You know, I guess that's also part of that feeling of knowing that like nothing really matters, like other people don't matter, because like after the foundation of your life crumbles and you only have yourself to depend on, you stop worrying about little things. You really do. Like the little stuff just doesn't matter anymore. So yeah, some of this is recovery and some of it is just surviving adversity and just making it through it.
And, you know, I was talking to another person with long-term recovery and we were talking about like, we're lucky because our shit, our bottoms fell out. Like,
yeah. And our addictions are glaringly obvious, you know, like I feel like we're lucky because it's pretty easy to point out like, oh yeah, I'm addicted to alcohol and I depend on this thing and it's ruining my life. Some people have insidious, deeply rooted addictions that average Joe can't see on the outside, you know, and they're a lot harder to find and dig into. And yeah, I feel like we're lucky because ours are like, oh, here it is. Like that didn't take long to find.
People that shop, like they get praised for that. They get praised for like collecting things.
Yeah, you just talked about my shoe collection, right? There it is. Yeah. That's shopping right there. That's emotional. Like, I mean, like I bought my feelings over there and you just praised me for it. Like, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
it's interesting. It really is. That is a perfect example.
Yeah, absolutely. This is just going to be honest. Like, I know that we're both addicts, right? Like, and I know that things like that are going to pop up in our lives. Yeah. And it's not a bad thing because like you are going to recognize it because you have been somewhere else. And if you lived your life afraid of alcohol and then started buying shoes and your fear of alcohol took your attention off of yourself so much that you're just addicted to something else, but your fear of alcohol is keeping that away from you.
You know, it's funny that you use the word fear of alcohol because that was one of the things that turned me off of, I hate to keep going back to this. It sounds like I have this grudge against AA and I don't.
I know exactly what you're going to say because I believe the same thing, but please.
Yeah, it was like, I just remember this, there was this constant fear in there. I remember like, I think I was about 90 days sober and I just been on the couch for 3 months. Like I had not left my apartment. And an old friend took me out, you know, about three of us went out. And it was my first time going out, getting dressed up, like going out to a bar in sobriety. And I had a great time. I had the best time. And, you know, it didn't jeopardize my sobriety. Like my friends were doing shots. They would bring me like a shot of lemonade. It was a really fun memory. And I remember telling everybody in a meeting about like, oh yeah, I went out to a bar. And it's like, I barely got through the sentence before I heard this big gasp, this collective gasp. And they're like, oh, you went to a bar. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to have to do that sometimes. And that's okay because I need to develop the strength to just get through life and be able to get through that stuff because you can't hide from everything. You cannot be afraid of this thing because then it's won. Mm-hmm. You know, it wins. And that's not freedom. You know, I want to be free from this thing. And that means not being afraid of it. I know that alcohol is no place in my life, but I'm not running from it.
It doesn't have a place anymore.
Right. But it still exists in this world. That's the thing. It's going to be everywhere. So you have to like reconcile like how to live with it. You know, it's just like anxiety. Like my deepest addiction is anxiety. I've had it since I was 7. And those thought patterns are so addictive. But I can't be afraid of it because I know that I'm probably always going to have it. That's just the way my brain is wired. And I accept that, but I'm not afraid of it. I just learn how to coexist with it. And it's like having a roommate, you know, and it's this thing I'm never going to be able to avoid 100%. So why not just learn how to deal with it and be free of the fear of it?
Right. I always talk about that as like, you have to offer these things some love because they exist.
They do. And also we can't ignore the fact that alcohol wasn't always bad. You know, I mean, is it something that's toxic? Yes. But we didn't drink it for years because it was shitty to us. It helped us. We liked the way it made it feel. I have some great memories around alcohol. I really do. And especially growing up in the restaurant industry and being around, you know, fine wine and things like that. Alcohol for a time brought me joy and helped me create memories. But that doesn't, something can't just be all good or all bad. You have to just accept it for what it is. And I can't just like blame alcohol. I say that I can't blame it. I can't be, you know, like you say, you can't be afraid of it because I have to just accept the fact that it was good sometimes, you know, the point that I'm really trying to make is like, if you were to blame, let's say you have somebody who made your life miserable, you had a bad parent or, you know, a neighbor or somebody that you blame for all these different things. Well, that's great. If you want to give them all the credit for everything that's negative that they did, go ahead and do it. But you got to give them credit for the positive stuff that they brought you to. You can't just have it one way. You have to accept everything in its wholeness for what it is. So we can't run away from alcohol and say like, this is this horrible thing. And it only brought me, I mean, I don't know, maybe for some people it did. Maybe for some people, they never had fun when they drank, you know, it only just put them straight into a gutter. But for me, I mean, I accept the fact that I chose to drink the way that I did. And I chose to experience alcohol the way that I did. Did it end up, you know, eventually did everything get shitty? Yes. But like, I can't just have selective memory about everything, you know. You have to embrace the good and the bad,
right? And take responsibility.
Exactly. Take responsibility, because those were my choices,
right? Because alcohol didn't do that. Is there stuff in your life today that is a struggle, but you're confident you will get through it? Whereas, like, when we are in this constant rote of alcoholism or drug use or whatever, we're like, we'll never change.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess really that just that need for control. I know I'm going to get, I know that I will get a lot better at that. You know, it's one thing just to say, like, let that go. And it's another thing to really do it. It's a daily, hourly, minute by minute thing sometimes. So really being okay with that is something that I know I will get to. And it's really exciting to be aware of that kind of change as it's happening, to go, oh my God, I can't believe that didn't bother me. That's amazing. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to sleep tonight. And that happened, you know, it's like, that is really exciting to just kind of relax on, like, to just loosen your grip. And that was one of my goals this year, of just learning to just loosen my grip and go with the flow a little bit more and be okay with the fact that it's not just like, okay, I accept the fact that I can't control everything. Okay, you can accept something, or you can also just be like totally fine with it. Like, I like this. And getting to that real deep rooted place of acceptance is awesome. And I think that's one of the neatest things that is, it's just so cool to watch in live time, you know, to go, oh man, a year ago, I would have never thought about it this way. Or 2 years ago, I would have let that shit eat me up for 7 days straight. You know, I mean, yeah. that is a really interesting change to be going through. And I really feel like that's going to continue to get better. And that's exciting. That is really exciting.
Do you have a moment in which you realized that you were thinking clearly?
Like,
in that way?
Yeah, I mean, just a week ago, you know, I had a couple of friends I wanted to invite out. And I remember, you know, I'm friends with them individually. And I remembered they had somehow been involved in an argument a couple of years ago. And I thought, you know, a year ago, I would have called them each separately and said, well, you know, so-and-so is going to be there. Are you sure you really want to go? And then I would have called the other one and said, you know, so-and-so is going to be there. And you guys got in that fight a couple of years ago. And I don't know if you guys want to be in the same room, but I'm inviting you both. And I, you know, it's like, I want to, you know, like,
control that shit.
Yes, I want to micromanage that. And it's like, when you really break it down, it's like, Trisha, it's your birthday. That's all you need to worry about.
Yeah.
Like, done. Stop. Like, you know?
Absolutely. Like, well, that's great. Like, just to have a moment where you realize, wait, I've grown in some real intense ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because like, little growths are great, where it's like, oh, I have time, I have this, I have that, we have all these little markers. But those, like, internal things, we could very easily just be living differently and never recognize it. So it was like the question is about, like, when are you becoming self-aware? Where are you becoming aware?
Yeah, and in that kind of sense, that's something that I realized while it was happening, like, oh, that's cool. And then I also realized that, like, when I start to micromanage those situations, all I'm doing is just, like, taking any potential for experiencing joy and flushing it down the toilet. Like, we have this one life in this body, and I want to have as much fun as I can, and I want to smile as much as I can, and I want to feel as much love as I can, and ain't nothing wrong with that. Doesn't mean that I'm going to feel it all the time, but any time that I sabotage my own joy, I got to stop doing that. I really do. Like, the only person who's losing out on that is me. And right. For what? You know, to worry about something that doesn't matter? That's just like, I don't know. I want to have a more positive and fulfilling and joyful life than that.
Yeah, and all of that, like, it doesn't exist. It's not that it just doesn't matter. It doesn't exist, yeah. Right? Like, they had an argument 3 years ago. Everything in your mind is bullshit.
Yeah, that's not even real. And the funny thing is, I'm sitting here worrying about it. They've probably forgotten all about it. They probably don't even remember the damn argument, you know? Mm-hmm.
There you are, living your life.
Yeah, there I am dreaming up the story and then, like, changing the course of my life over this one tiny story that happened years ago. And we all do that. We get so wrapped up in our heads and we think that everything is real, and it's just not. You know, your thoughts are just thoughts and they're fleeting.
And when you say we, I just want to point out that that is not we in recovery. That is we human beings.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the self-centeredness of this too. And I think that the words, like the phrase self, being self-centered, again, is another misnomer, because you feel like everybody is thinking about you all the time, but it's not that. It's just that we live in our own head. We are the star of our own show, and we feel like everybody else is a supporting cast. And there's, what, 7 or 8 billion of us on the planet. We can't all be the star of the show, but we're so just in our own head that we make everything about us, because that's just how our brains are. We only live right in our head.
Yeah, you can only think with your brain, and your brain right is only thinking about you.
Right.
Because it's got to keep you alive.
Something I need to do to balance myself out and just stay humble is remember the fact that I am one of 7 billion.
Right.
I'm not that important. You know, I'm just not. There's too many of us on this planet for me to be that important. Like, I just have to remember that when all else fails, I really don't matter. I don't.
That's right. That's something I remind myself of all the time. It's just like, you know, yes, you're awesome. You're doing all these great things, and like, but it doesn't matter. Like,
yeah.
Like, you're doing it. You're not doing it to matter. Like, you matter as much as you ever will. Other people matter too. Everybody else matters just as much and as little as you do.
Mm-hmm.
How do you foresee, like, the next 5 years?
I'm in a lot of transition right now. Mm-hmm. And I think in the next 5 years, I would like to be, I mean, hopefully just a little more chill than I am now.
Still, keep your expectations low.
still kind of working towards, like, loosening my grip a little bit. You know, being a workaholic, I do find a lot of passion and purpose in my work, but I'm also finding, you know, I'm sort of transitioning out of a 20-year long restaurant career and moving into whatever happens to me next. And what Wonderful. I love that I don't know exactly what that is. And I love that I'm okay with that. You know, that is to kind of just be going with the flow and not knowing exactly what's next. I like that now. I genuinely like that. It doesn't really cause me any anxiety because I know that a lot of the times my own ideas, my like control freak ideas of how things should be, aren't great ideas because these surprises that I have in store or that are in store for me are so much bigger and better than the things I could ever try to dream up for myself. So surrendering to that and relaxing and going, yeah, I don't know what's next, but I'm okay with that, really sets me up to just experience everything for what it is. And I think that's all I want is just to kind of stay present for it all, be open for it, surrender to it, be okay that I can't control it all. And as long as I kind of just stay in that mindset, I don't know what's next for the 5 years, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to suck. So, you know,
that's great because there's a big difference between that and what I would consider like early recovery fear and all that kind of stuff, where it's just like next 5 years, I'm holding on tight, right? Like you're in this place where you're like, I'm letting it go.
Yeah. And I mean, I've held on tight for a long time and it still got me right here, like to this chair, right?
Right.
You're having this conversation with you. I think if I had let up a little bit, it still would have gotten me right here, but I probably would have had a little bit more fun in the meantime. I probably would have been a little less stressed out in the meantime. But, you know, it's like, I'm still going to get to my destination.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I can just kind of enjoy the ride a little bit more and know that I'm still going to get there. You know, I think that, like, so growing up codependent and a people pleaser and being married to a narcissist, which codependents and narcissists go together so well, learning how to just be okay with dealing with myself and stop worrying about what I think other people want me to be, because it's only what I think. That's not real. It's just not real. So just, you know, we say it a lot. It's so cheesy. It's such an ism, but like staying on my side of the street, like it works. I'm just worried about myself right now and not worrying so much about what other people think. Cause again, it's just doesn't matter. It's not real.
And have you noticed your ability to like love other people? Like how's that like grown or shifted for you over the last couple of years?
So I've always loved people. I'm an empath. You know, like my strengths finder, like it's empathy and relating and being a super adapter. So I just love to connect with people and experience feelings with them. And my ability to love people has grown, but so have my boundaries. Because I definitely judge people a lot less, and I still want to experience feelings with them, but I don't take on their shit as much because I know that that doesn't equal my love for them. So I can't let people like just like suck me dry because they used to, you know, because I didn't know how to say no, or I would just take on their problems. I can still love on people just as much and still protect my own energy and my own boundaries, and which really just makes me able to give more when I'm really protective of how much I really, you know, love people and connect with them. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, perfectly. Actually, like, I believe, like, loving people where they're at, meaning, like, you don't have to do anything in order to love them, right? Like, that's...
You can go, I see you. I recognize you. I see
that's
you.
It. Yeah. That is just like, that is everything.
Mm-hmm. People just want to be seen and heard and felt, and having the boundaries and being able to say like, hey, yeah, I understand where you're at. I see you. I feel you. I can stop there. I can stop there, and that is okay.
Yeah.
And that's still loving somebody, you know, but it's not like sacrificing yourself for somebody.
Right. You can still offer them all the love that you ever would, but sometimes love is just like, I am going to support you with my love, and that is it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I'm not trying to fix people because I used to love trying to fix people with my love, and you can't do that.
No, they gotta fix themselves, and you don't have to change how you love them whether they do or not. Thank you so much. Oh my God, yeah. Look, that was so nice.
That was
beautiful. I want to thank Trisha for her time, and I want to thank you for listening to the Recover Yourself podcast. You can find links to the Recovery Happy Hour and other things that Trisha is doing in the description of this video. Recovery Happy Hour is downloadable on all your favorite podcast apps. And you can follow Trisha on Instagram or Facebook at Recovery Happy Hour. At the time of this recording, there were still spots available for the 6 and 8 p.m. May 21st Happier Hour, which is an online experience produced by Trisha. If you want to follow Trisha on Instagram or Facebook, you can find her at Recovery Happy Hour. Thank you again for listening to the Recover Yourself podcast. I'm your host, Martin John. Until next week, keep recovering yourself.